Morning to all of you. It's good to see you. We have a number of visitors. We're glad that you are here, and we hope that you will give us an opportunity to meet you and talk to you after services are over. We haven't done so already. If you are in the community, we would like to become your home church, and we would be happy to talk to you about how we could do that. We live in an age of wonders. Knowledge is more freely available than it has ever been at any time in human history. Nearly anything you want to know is a Google search away. You need to fix your car? There is probably a video you can watch that will show you exactly how to do it. You want to learn to play an instrument? It's amazing. You can find somebody showing you how to play it from scratch. You can know nothing about it today, and within a few weeks' time, be playing an instrument that you didn't know how to play. You want to start a new hobby. You want to buy a car. There's a tremendous amount of information available to you on any of these things in a matter of seconds. We are more connected to everyone we know and to a lot of people we don't know than we ever have been before. There's Facebook, then Twitter, then Instagram, and Snapchat, and whatever's replaced that. I don't know what the young people are doing these days. I can't keep up anymore. We can video conference with our families thousands of miles away. Pretty much everything that they had on Star Trek has come true now, I think, except for the teleporter or whatever they called it. The internet at its core is a communication tool. Probably the most powerful communication tool that has ever been devised by man. And its blessings, if used correctly, are practically limitless. Our church website, for example, is well designed. It serves a number of important functions. It increases communication among the members. It reminds us of assignments. It helps us spread the gospel. You can, with one click, share an entire sermon to somebody that you think needs it. However, and this is an enormous however, if misused, the internet has potential to do more damage to God's people than perhaps any other tool in Satan's arsenal. And make no mistake, he is eager to use it against us. He wants to make us ineffective. He wants to embarrass us, to compromise us, to ensnare us. All of those things. I'm going to mention this morning four dangers that we face online that I think we need to be aware of, and parents especially need to be watching out for. And I realize that the nature of some things that I'm going to talk about this morning may prompt some parents to protect little ears, and I understand. That's not going to offend me at all. I'm not going to be indelicate. In fact, if your children are in public school, they've already heard everything I'm going to say. I guarantee it. But if you want to cover their ears during point number four, there's your fair warning, and I won't be offended. First danger that we face online is a danger to our time. A couple of years ago, I saw an online discussion where people were asking the question, if someone from the 1950s were magically transported to today, what would be the thing that would surprise them the most about our society? And the best response, by the number of votes it received, was this: I have in my pocket a device which can access a sum total of human knowledge. I use it to look at pictures of cats and get in arguments with strangers. It's funny because it's true. There may not be a more effective time-wasting device ever invented than the internet. Go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 8. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Part of walking as children of light is finding out what's acceptable to the Lord, trying to figure out what he wants. That should be, as a Christian, my number one goal in life. Find out what the Lord wants and do it. And just in case we don't get the point, go down to verses 15 and 16. Verses 15 and 16. See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Be intentional about how you use your time. When I'm logging on, when I'm scrolling through my feed, when I'm about to click on the next suggested video in the series, what's my purpose? Is there something else I really should be doing that this is keeping me from? Well, I look back at my week with regret at the things I didn't get done because I spent my time doing this. John Piper, who I disagree with profoundly on a number of issues, tweeted something about this, and it absolutely bloodied my nose when I read it. One of the greatest uses of Twitter and Facebook will be to prove at the last day that prayerlessness was not from lack of time. On this, he is right. On this, he is right. And we can insert anything we want for prayerlessness, lack of study, lack of time with brethren, lack of time training our children, whatever it is. It will prove that if we didn't fail to do these things, it was not because we didn't have time. We've allowed a giant time vacuum into our lives. Because you don't have time to do what you should be doing because, well, now I've got to get the work done that I didn't get done when I was following Wikipedia down a giant rabbit hole that has no bottom. We've all done it. And it's easy to trick ourselves into thinking that we're actually doing something useful or educational when in fact we're just wasting time because we're not intentional about it. We're not thinking about the way we are spending our time online. Go to 1 Kings chapter 20. 1 Kings chapter 20, there's a statement there that I think is important for us to keep in our minds. 1 Kings chapter 20, starting in verse 35. 1 Kings 20, starting in verse 35. This is right after Ahab, who was supposed to kill Ben-Hadad, had just let him go. And so a certain man of the sons of prophets, verse 35, said to his neighbor by the word, Lord, strike me, please. And the man refused to strike him. Said to him, because you have not obeyed the voice of the Lord, surely as soon as you depart from me, a lion will kill you. And as soon as he left him, a lion found him and killed him. So he found another man and said, strike me, please. So the man struck him, inflicting a wound. The prophet departed and waited for the king by the road, disguised himself with a bandage over his eyes. Now, as the king passed by, he cried out to the king and said, your servant went out in the midst of the battle, and there a man came over and brought a man to me and said, guard this man. If by any means he is missing, your life shall be for his life, or else you shall pay a talent of silver. While your servant was busy here and there, he was gone. Then the king of Israel said to him, so shall your judgment be, you yourself have decided. And at that point, he reveals himself to Ahab and basically tells him, you're the one who let the man get away. This is all your fault. But notice his phrase there, while I was busy here and there, he was gone. Even as rotten as Ahab was, he knew that you can't do this. You can't have that as a soldier. You're supposed to be doing your duty, and you kind of get distracted and get busy doing something else and let him go. Even Ahab knew better than that. And I'm afraid that describes too many of our lives. Well, I was busy here and there, and it just got away from me. It got away from me. That is a major danger to us online. Second danger that we face is a danger to our reputation. A Christian who is online faces a number of risks to his reputation that could do a lot of harm to his influence and, by extension, to the cause of our Lord. Our internet experience is generally built on likes and shares and leaving your comments. That's generally what we do, right? We like, we share, we leave our comment. One of the reasons I think that the internet is so appealing and perhaps even addictive to people is that it's not only like some magic genie that will just show you whatever you want, maybe even things you didn't even know you wanted instantly, but it then invites you to tell your friends, tell everyone else what you think about it, so your likes can become their likes. They can like what you shared. We can add our comments. We can add our opinions. We can tell everyone what we think about this. We're essentially able to broadcast ourselves to the world in a way that has never been possible before. And none of that is necessarily wrong in itself, obviously. But there are several grave, grave reputational dangers if we're not careful about what we like and share. We have to remember that we are communicating when we do that. We are communicating. The internet is a communication tool. Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Unfortunately, it is far too easy to allow our speech to fall short of graciousness, sometimes far short of graciousness. Occasionally, it will be because we have shared something that's just outright false, perhaps unintentionally. I've seen far too many of us share things that just turn out not to be true. The internet is notorious for spreading false information. In fact, Willie Nelson wrote a song about it this year. I don't know if any of you have heard it. The song is called "I Woke Up Still Not Dead Again Today." And if you haven't heard it, the second line is, "The internet said I had passed away." That's what happens. People share things without bothering to check if it's true or not. He's one that dies frequently on the internet. I think Morgan Freeman dies just about every year because people share these things without thinking, without checking. Christians already have to fight the perception that we are a bunch of gullible chumps who will just believe anything. If we get caught doing this, that is not good. We cannot afford mistakes like that. If you don't know whether it's true or not, don't say it. And sharing it on the internet counts as saying it. We have to remind ourselves of that from time to time. There are also things online that are inflammatory. Have you noticed that? Somewhat. Our speech is not gracious if it's inflammatory. I'm not talking about inflammatory in the legal sense. We're actually inciting people to violence. Obviously, that's there, but I don't think I need to remind anybody here not to do that. But there's plenty of speech that falls well short of incitements to violence that we still don't have any business engaging in. Sarcastic put-downs of people who disagree with us on whatever issue it is, written in large print, usually on a picture of Sam Elliott or Gene Wilder, or I think sometimes Chuck Norris. Even if that's true, even if the point he makes is a valid point, that's not the way to do it. Who does that help? Not only does it not help bring people who disagree with you to your side, I mean, if you want to get someone who disagrees with you to continue disagreeing with you, be sarcastic. That is a great way to do it. They will probably stop listening. But not only that, it makes it far less likely that they're going to listen when you try to share things that are of a spiritual nature, things that you really do need them to listen to. We can't have that. As some of you already know, in fact, I think Tom mentioned this last time he was up here because we talked about it, that my personal policy is that I will not debate people online. I just won't do it. It's not because I'm afraid of debating. I'm a professional advocate. Debating is kind of what I do for a living. But online, too much of the way we communicate is stripped out of it. The other person can't tell if I'm smiling. They can't tell what my posture is. They can't tell what my tone of voice is. And unlike an in-person conversation online, people are completely free to interrupt and hijack the conversation for whatever they want. And so if I need to talk to someone, I try to do it in person. If I can't do that, I will send them a message privately that nobody else can hijack, because people can bring up more stuff in about 5 seconds than you can answer in 3 hours. And once you go down that hole, you're going to be there all day. Everybody's going to end up mad. And generally speaking, you're not going to make any progress with people. That's my experience. Your mileage may vary. Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 and 37 is a terrifying, terrifying verse to me. Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 and 37. This is one of the reasons I decided, you know what? No more online debates because of this. Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 36. But I say to you, this is Jesus talking, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Again, saying it on the internet is still saying it. And I don't know if you've noticed, but some people get on there and they say things they would never say to your face. Saying it on the internet is still saying it. Third thing we have to worry about with regards to our reputation is endorsing evil. And I've mentioned this before. I think I even talked about it the last time I was up here. But our speech is not gracious if it gives others the impression, even unintentionally, that we support sin or evil. Your coworker shares pictures of their vacation. Like, in that album you will find pictures of their brewery tour, them standing nearly nude on a beach, and a picture of their teenage son with an inappropriate slogan on his t-shirt. Matt Duggan likes this. That's a great message for the world to see. They have a stamp of your approval on everything that's there. Saying it on the internet is saying it. Romans chapter 1, verses 28 through 32 talks about the kinds of things that happen when God just gives up on a society. And it's an ugly picture. But notice the last thing that he says. The people who do these things are deserving of death. And those who approve of those who practice them. You don't have to engage in them yourself. All you have to do is put your stamp of approval on it. Like and share. Like and share. That's what we do. Online, that stamp of approval is broadcast globally in seconds. And our reputation along with it. Your brother-in-law shares the most amazing video you've ever seen. And there's nothing wrong with the video. But the caption above it, and perhaps he forgot to look at the caption above it, or the username of the person who posted it, contains profanity. I don't care how cool your video is. If it has that, I'm not sharing it. Because, again, we're putting our stamp of approval on something that a Christian cannot approve of. Your neighbor posts exciting news. They've raised over $2,000 for their mission trip to Africa. Like, how could nobody like that? Everybody has to like that, right? We're helping people in Africa. Well, your neighbor teaches people that all they have to do to be saved is accept Jesus in their heart, and that's it. And so if their trip is successful, they'll have the unfortunate side effect of convincing people who are lost that they are saved. I can't like that. Encouraging error is not gracious speech, and it does great harm to our reputation when we're not intentional about what we like and share. Third danger that Christians face online is the danger of adopting the world's ethics. I think this is especially a danger to the young who have not yet developed the discernment that some of us who are older have. I mean, the older ones want to argue about it and be sarcastic. The younger ones are more in danger of adopting the world's attitudes, the world's ethics. According to the world, if you don't believe that any lifestyle choice, including choice of pronouns these days, is acceptable, that should be affirmed and celebrated, well, you're an outcast. You're unfit for polite society. If you don't believe that evolution is true, you're an outcast. You're a foolish bumpkin. Who would pay attention to what you think? If you don't believe in the dictates of science, whatever they are this week, you're dangerous. You must be silenced. If you believe the Bible contains any truth or relevance to modern society, you're the object of ridicule. This is the way the world thinks. Even websites that purport to be neutral tend to show these kinds of biases at the very least, sometimes even worse things than this. Wikipedia is going to have that kind of bias. YouTube certainly, for the most part, will have that bias, at least in what they will suggest. And any mainstream news outlet is probably going to support at least those things. It used to be that you had to put up with that kind of stuff at school, possibly at work, depending on what your job was. But once you got home, it was not that hard to get away from it, especially if you limited the amount of TV that you watched. But these devices that we now carry around in our pockets at all times are constantly pumping us with information. They're constantly doing it. Dad spoke about 1 Corinthians 15:33 last week, so I don't feel like I have to belabor this point. But the idea of evil companionships corrupting good morals, these are more constant companions to us than nearly any other person. And they're pumping us full, they're pumping our children full of ethics and reasoning that is foreign to the Scriptures. It's foreign to the Scriptures. Encouraging people to conform to the world's image is a great danger that we face from our time spent online. All right, this is point number four, and so don't say you weren't warned. Fourth danger that Christians face online is the danger of pornography. I wish I didn't have to talk about this, but the more I have witnessed, even among young people, I think some of them think it's a joke, the more compelled I feel to speak out about it. Back in May, I had to go to Las Vegas for a work trip. And they don't have anything that I need in Las Vegas. I mean, there's just nothing I'm interested in there. And the whole time that I was there, I kind of felt like I was walking around in an open sewer. And I just didn't want to get anything on me. I was offered things just walking down the street. I've never been offered in my life. And I tried to make it clear that I was disgusted by it, but they kept trying. What occurred to me after I got home and got away from that is we've taken that open sewer and we've hooked it up to our homes. We carry it around in our pockets. Our children walk around with it in their pockets where it can be accessed at any time unless we are monitoring and filtering very carefully. And even then, I don't know that it's perfect. I haven't found anything in a few months of looking that can prevent everything from getting through or being bypassed. A 2014 study found that among college-age males, nearly half of them, 49%, encountered pornography, hardcore pornography, before the age of 13. That's college-age males in 2014. The latest numbers I've seen suggest it may be now as young as 9. 9 years old, exposed to hardcore pornography because they're walking around with an open sewer in their pocket. I want to call your attention to some recent news items and try to make some connections for you. The first is an article that was in the Wall Street Journal just this Friday. It was called "Cheap Sex and the Decline of Marriage." And the quote is as follows: "Marriage in the U.S. is an open retreat. As recently as 2000, married 25 to 13-year-olds outnumbered never married peers by a margin of 55 to 34%, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. By 2015, the most recent year for which data are available, those estimates had almost reversed, with never marrieds outnumbered marrieds by 53 to 40%. Young Americans have quickly become wary of marriage. Many economists and sociologists argue that this flight from marriage is about men's low wages. If they were higher, the argument goes, young men would have the confidence to marry, but recent research does not support this view. A May 2017 study from the National Bureau of Economic Research focusing on regions enriched by the fracking boom found that increased wages in those places did nothing to boost marriage rates. The article goes on to state that the decline in marriage seems to be attributable to the way that attitudes about sex have changed. People no longer expect commitment of any kind before having sex. A 2014 study of sexual behaviors found that 32% of men under 40 were having sexual relations with their current partner before the relationship started. That doesn't make any sense to me, but that's what the study found. We used to have to worry and teach on sex before marriage. Apparently, now it's sex before dating. That's how bad it's gotten. Second item is the death this week of Hugh Hefner, who spent his life profiting from the exploitation of desperate women to satisfy the desires of depraved men. I don't say that to be unkind, but only to make the point that if a woman is willing to take her clothes off for money, she is most certainly desperate, whether she knows it or not. A man who buys what he is selling is depraved. There's no excuse for it. Matthew chapter 5, verse 28. If you even look, you have the heart of an adulterer. Christ is clear on that. Revelation 21, verse 8. The sexually immoral will be cast into the lake of fire. He doesn't want us messing around with this stuff. Someone asked Hugh Hefner in an interview a few years ago what he was proudest of. And his response was that he's proudest that he changed people's attitudes about sex. Well, indeed he did. What we are facing now is orders of magnitude worse than anything he ever published in his magazine. And it used to be that if you wanted to consume that kind of product, you had to at least go to the store and buy it. You probably had to go to kind of the seedy side of town and be around unsavory people who were also interested in that. Now it is freely available, and it gives the illusion that it is private. No one ever has to find out if I click this link, if I watch this video, if I do whatever it is that I'm planning to do. Chapter 7, beginning in verse 6. Solomon describes a person who doesn't have any sense. And he knows he doesn't have any sense before he even does anything because of where he is. He is headed toward the house of an irreputable woman. And because of where he is choosing to go, Solomon says, I know this guy has no sense. He doesn't have any understanding. If you choose to go here, you are in the same shape as this young man that Solomon witnessed. In fact, maybe even more so. Because we assume that it's private, we assume that we can get away with it, we assume that no one will ever know, and it consumes us. It consumes us. What the research is telling us, and I can share some of this with anyone who's interested, is that among other problems, and you know, we could talk about problems all day long. It's wrong because God said it's wrong. But if you want to talk about problems, one of the problems is that pornography hijacks your brain's reward system in exactly the same way that drugs and alcohol do. Pornography addicts describe desiring explicit images, but not liking them. They desire them, but don't like them. They wish they couldn't do it. They wish they could leave it alone, but they can't because they've messed up their brains. That's what it will do to you. Predictably, the practice now of sexting has taken off, largely due to the influence of pornography, especially exposure to it at such young ages. You have these young boys, mostly, who have been marinating in this since the age of 9, 10, 11, and so by the time they start seeking out relationships, with actual girls who are their peers, this is what they ask for. I realize that Snapchat is considered to be mainstream, but I don't think anybody makes a secret of the fact it was intended and designed as a sexting app. That's what it was for. I would be very hesitant to let a young person use that for that reason, simply because even if they don't do anything, you have no idea what is going to be sent to them. Young men apparently think it is acceptable now to send pictures of themselves to girls they don't even know because of the influence of pornography. They've messed up their brains. Law enforcement is struggling with what to do with these teenagers, 12, 13, 14 years old, who are sexting each other. They're not over the age of consent. They are trafficking in child pornography that they have created themselves, of themselves. This is where we are now as a society. Children are distributing their own pornography, which is illegal. And law enforcement and our legislators don't really know what to do about it. Parents have to step in. They have to. I realize this hasn't been comfortable to listen to, but in conclusion, let's talk briefly about what we need to do. Well, one, we have to be aware of the danger. We cannot sleepwalk through this. There is no good reason for your child to have access to a device that is an unfiltered open sewer. There's just no good reason for it. If you have a problem with that, you can come talk to me. The elders didn't tell me to say this, but that's my opinion. I think the evidence bears that out. If you choose to do that, you had better monitor what they see. And even then, realize that it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. You're not going to catch everything. Perhaps you can purchase something that will monitor what they do for you. In a perfect world, you'd be able to clone the device that, so that you saw everything that went on. I don't know how possible that is. But keep in mind that there are two sources that you're going to have to filter. You're going to have to filter your home internet provider, and you're going to have to filter your cellular provider. Otherwise, if they're seeking out these things, they'll just go to whichever one is not filtered. The third thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to practice self-control. We're going to have to teach self-control. Galatians 5:23 mentions self-control last as one of the fruits of the Spirit. And I think that's on purpose because it is the queen of all the virtues. If we can practice self-control, we can overcome anything that Satan throws at us. We have to teach that because, unfortunately, we live in a society that is connected all the time to an open sewer. That's where we live. Number four, we have to be honest about what we're facing. I'm afraid that this topic, because it's uncomfortable, has not been mentioned enough. And perhaps I'm partly guilty of that. I've been preaching on and off since I was 15. And this is the first time I've spent this much time on the issue. That's probably my fault. We have to be aware of what we're facing and be honest about it, or we're going to lose. This is an existential threat to all of us. It will wipe out the next generation. It may be eating away even at the older generation if we're not paying attention. And finally, we need to pray about this. We need to be beseeching God constantly on behalf of ourselves, on behalf of our children, that we do not fall prey to what Satan is offering. Now, I realize that this has not been a lesson designed to help a person become a Christian. It's been aimed at Christians because Christians need to do right. They need to know right and they need to do right. And if you're struggling with this, we don't want to judge you. We don't want to make you feel like you're a worse sinner than anyone else here. We want to help you. There is help available. Make yourself accountable to someone. Let us work with you. We can get you through it. We've done it before. If you're struggling with any sin, though, know that the cure for your sin is the same as any other. It's the blood of Jesus Christ. Jesus came to this earth and gave his life so that we can be free from sin, from any sin that Satan puts in our way. He has decreed that he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He can save to the uttermost those who put their faith and trust in him. If you've done this in your past and you realize that you have fallen prey to Satan, come make that right. Get back on the right road. We want to stand and sing the song at this time to encourage you to obey Christ. If you have a need, please come as we sing.